Yachting International Radio is hosting their first Mental Health and Yachting Forum, the Yachting Mind and Wellness Forum, on June 28th and 29th. This free online event features an esteemed list of speakers, including Gary Napier and Hugo Ortega. Join us for sessions that address sobriety on yachts, how to choose a therapist, dealing with depression while on board, and much more. Don't miss this opportunity to engage in vital discussions and enhance your well-being within the yachting community. Book your spot today.
So welcome to Bro Talk, and I'm delighted to introduce Hugo today. Hugo, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me, Gary.
You're more than welcome. Now, Hugo, you were the first person on my list in regards to men's mental health, and you're now the final person I'm interviewing because you've been away. So if you can tell the listeners who you are, where you've been traveling, and what your passion is.
Sure thing. So my name's Hugo Ortega. I'm founder of Super Yacht Sunday School, but I've worked in the super yachting industry for 8-9 years. I just came back from St. Martin, where I was working as a temp officer for 1 month on a 60-plus-meter vessel. And my passions are, for one, traveling, eating. It's really been a passion of mine. I'm in Thailand right now, and culinary exquisites galore over here. So I'm really excited to be here. And also just helping people, right? I teach, I help recruit, I help people get into this industry. So I've always had a passion for teaching. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
And tell me a bit more. I mentioned to you briefly before we started that one of my daughters really interested in Thailand, and she's training to become a teacher and teach over there. So yeah, that's part of your passion as well.
Yeah. So part of my passion is Thailand for sure. I do love it here. Like I said, I love the food here. But when I'm referring to teaching, I also just love teaching people about the career that I just did, right? So I spent almost 9 years working as a super yacht crew officer captain. And I'm really passionate about passing that on because I know it's been an uphill battle for myself and so many people in order to figure out what's the next step. What do I do after this? Yeah. And I love filling in the gaps.
So Hugo, more personally, how has it impacted you as a person working in the yacht industry?
That's a really good question. I would say it's made me a lot more aware of just different people's backgrounds, things in the world, right? I've learned everything from going more in depth on French cheese and wine to understand, you know, other people in the Anglosphere, how they grew up, what their values, what their morals are. Because, you know, that's a big block at first. Figuring out why someone is the way they are is typically linked to, you know, how they grew up. So that was a big adjustment. And I think it's made me more open and understanding of people. And that comes with its set of difficulties, right? Yachting can be a very stressful and difficult environment, right? I always say to people, yachting isn't the place where you get your shit together, right? You have to get there in a pretty good state, because if not, the pressure, the time, everything can bubble up and make it really difficult. So I think there's definitely been a lot of stresses I'm sure I've had to learn to handle and be better about while in yachting. So it's a bit of both, a lot of growth and interpersonal growth.
Yeah,
probably maybe we'll know in the next 10 years, maybe onset of some early gray hairs, who knows?
So with the stresses, who did you go to? Did you go to your captain, colleagues, fellow crewmates? How were you supported?
I would say it's a mix of a few different ways. Probably not enough going all the way to the top, probably on my end. A lot of time, you can establish a pretty good friendship / hierarchical relationship with the mate or someone that's above you.
Yeah.
So I think when I was early on in early days, confiding in the mate or the bosun and talking about things, whether it was things that are happening on the boat or things that are drama with other crew members, for the most part, I've been very lucky to not have too much stresses back home. I know that can happen to people, right? Death in the family and so many things that also then add complexity. But I think for me, usually, I'm usually good about picking someone and confiding in them, like within my, maybe the next rung up or within my sphere. And then sometimes having a confidant, like on the other department, like having a stew or someone I'm really good friends with that I can just vent and they'll hear and then they'll vent and we both know that's really not going anywhere and we're not going to do anything with it.
And is that open for example, new people coming into the industry, are they told about in terms of how they can share problems or support they can get? Or is it find out as you go along?
It's difficult because that almost answers the question of also why I do what I do. I do what I do because I want people to learn all the things that you don't learn at the beginning, because it's really dependent on the boat, right? If you're on a really big vessel, they'll give you this is the hotline for the DPA, the designated person ashore. This is this resource we have. This is another resource we have. The company also provides this. sometimes when you're on a really small yacht, it's more, okay, your uniform's on, you're 5 minutes late to go to work, right? It's a lot less about the HR and the whole experience. It's just we're getting this objective done and that's it. So I'd say that a large amount of the yachting community, for the most part, I would suspect, and I know also because I interact with a lot of people coming in, they're not very aware of what resources they'd have on this front. And we don't have too many, to be honest, right? I think there's one account, there's the crew coach and someone else, and they're aimed at health and wellness, including mental health, and helping crew through these difficult times. But I don't really know what they offer. And I'm in the servicing space. So if I don't know, I think a lot of crew are probably also pretty unaware.
So as a man, and you mentioned previously that you've got two different areas where you can share and offload. Is it easy for you, Hugo, to speak to someone to share issues, or do you wait till it comes to breaking point before you share? How do you manage your personal issues or business issues?
I'm probably a mixed bag because, to be honest, one, being Latin or Hispanic, it's very un-Latin to open up and share too much, right? It's that whole machismo, I'm keeping everything inside and I've got the family on my back and work over here and I can handle everything.
Yeah.
So I think I do default to a bit of that, but then also growing up in this day and age, I'm also quite aware of the importance of sharing. So I think I do a decent bit of sharing, especially with my partner or whoever.
Yeah.
But I do think the really difficult topics or the really big things, I tend to keep them inside until I feel like, not I'm at a breaking point and it gets catastrophic, but until I feel like I can't anymore, and then I'll try to offload some. But there, I probably maybe like 80-20, right? I keep 20 and I give 80.
Yeah. And what would you not expect you to go into detail, but what would you consider to be a difficult topic?
That's a good point as well. Let's say that to me, and I'm no expert because I didn't study it, but I imagine like stresses, there's little ones and there's big ones, right? Meeting deadlines, or I've got to email this person out, or I've got this giant to-do list. That's all pretty low. And sometimes I even talk while I work, right? My partner knows all of that stuff. But let's say it's something much more in tune with myself, maybe that I'm feeling, maybe I've had a lot of bad things happen, maybe like a missed deal and a missed deadline and this, and now I'm starting to turn maybe negative. Man, I've really had a shit week. What's wrong with me? Kind of thing. I'm probably not as open to go out and just say, hey, I'm feeling really low about myself this week. Or like, that's probably something I would keep in until I see it start affecting other things. Then I'll go, hey, I think I'm acting this way, or I'm acting out of tune because these things have added up. But I only give that because now it's like obvious, right? It's bubbled to the surface in some way. And I'm probably still saying it between teeth. I don't really want to say it.
So you share like many of us when it can't be hidden anymore, or it's starting to reveal itself. That pressure, the stress, or whatever you're trying to contain.
I'd say so, which I know it's not the healthiest. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to be better. And I think anything in the middle, I'm pretty open with sharing pretty easily, especially with my partner. But there's just that something intrinsic that you're scared to give that last bit up. I don't know. Maybe it's, like I said, the upbringing, the culture. I remember growing up watching even The Sopranos, right? And I remember in episode one, when he says that he misses the days when those tough guys, James Dean and everyone, they didn't go to any psychologists. They just kept it inside and kept shooting guns off. And part of that's still in there. I feel like I am part of that generation that saw the change when people were like, no, therapy's for crazy people. And now it's, therapy's for anyone. So it's like this weird transition point.
And if you don't mind me asking, Hugo, your relationship with your parents, because you come across the real as a really confident man. Is that instilled from your family background?
I would say so. My father's quite a strong figure. He's head of household. He's the only one that worked because my mother was a homemaker, but she's also a strong, independent woman too. Took care of the kids, took care of everything at home. So I think on both fronts, I had two strong characters that I know they're also still together, still married. So I think that probably did help shape me, my outlook on life, and how I carry myself.
And it's great that you had that stability from your parents and they're still together today. Fantastic. And your relationship with your dad, was he your hero? Did you want to be like him? Did you inspire?
That's a good point. I probably don't do enough self-reflection on that front. I'd say he was a strong figure that I aspired to be like. probably, especially when I was a kid, hero too. I think he's done a lot. And I'm really proud of what he's achieved. So yeah, I think somewhere in there, right? Highly respected and also hero in a lot of facets too.
Because in the UK this weekend, it's Father's Day. I'm not sure when they celebrate it in the US. Has it been and gone?
Oh, shit. I always forget. I think it's hard because I work with so many. I think, okay, third Sunday in June, so it's coming up for us too. I think we share similar Father's Days, but I think our Mother's Days are different, if I remember.
Okay. Yeah.
And yeah, so, hey, thanks for that.
No problem. Your father can thank me too. And fathers get mixed press, and I'm putting it that mildly. That's why I like promoting where we do have good experiences with our fathers, and you sound like you had a very good experience and still a good relationship with your dad. What would you say as a son, what does a son need from a father, and what would you say a son needs from a mother?
Put me on the hot seat today. Interesting. I would say, and maybe I'm also adhering to social norms that I shouldn't be, but when I imagine what you get from the father and the mother, I imagine the father being a lot of the guidance on life, really. At least that's what I got, right? This is right. This is wrong. This is how a man carries himself in these situations. This is the expectations when you're married. This is what a man provides. Again, a lot of the traditional side, obviously growing up from, I'm first generation American, so my parents are straight from Latin America.
Sure.
So there is a little bit of cultural bias there. Mm-hmm. But this is how the household runs, the regimen, the ruling, this is how you should treat people. All that, I feel like that came from my father. Obviously, a lot of the emotional side and the softness from the mother then behind. But I feel like my dad taught me about the work ethics, how hard to work to get what you want in life, go to college, all those kind of morals. And on my mother's side, it was a lot more maybe dealing with other people. This is how you interact with people. This is how you talk with people. This is how, like, the emotional side. At least that's kind of, I think, how that came about with mine. Like, a lot of the warmthness I have, how to love, all that stuff, I think that also came from my mother's side. The importance of family, the importance of taking care of each other. When someone's sick, this is what you do, like all that stuff. Thinking about it now in 2024, I'm not sure if that's entirely the case for everyone.
Maybe not. I think the principles are still there. And it was interesting how you said, obviously, the emotional, the softness side for my mother. the nurturing is definitely from the mother. And the reason why I'm asking also from a professional point of view is because whilst men will ask these questions when recruiting, essentially that part of that person, whether they grew up with a mum, dad, the influences around them, is at some time going to show itself in that work environment. And it's, they recognise it all. How do we deal with this, or what's going on here? And I imagine self-esteem. Yeah, we've all got self-esteem, but whether it's self-esteem is high, self-esteem is middle, self-esteem is really low. And I think that's a huge factor on our background, our upbringing, and naturally with different experiences with that impacts us during life, throughout life.
Yeah, I'd say probably I think a lot of my esteem would come from my mother, except I guess it's intertwined. But yeah, that's interesting to think about. Yeah.
So going forward, what's you hint about the next 10 years in terms of your role, the industry? It's a big question, 10 years, it may break down to 5 years. How do you foresee it? And especially regards to mental health. You said there's not a lot of help out there, there's not enough. So how would you like to see those changes?
Well, in terms of, there's probably two factors to that question. What I would like to see and where I think it'll probably go.
Yeah.
I think they're both heading in the same trajectory. I think the industry has opened up immensely in terms of even the concept of mental health, right? When I joined, and I know these people still exist because I still see them lurking on Facebook and whatever corner I'm in, but a lot of people are so negative to the idea, right? When I was crew, the boats didn't even sail on water and you had to buy your own food and life was so hard and we got paid in pennies and all this crazy shit, right? People love talking about how bad it was back then and no one cried and no one needed mental health and no one took vacations. And it's a surprise that the maritime industry it is even hiring anymore because it was such good times before. But basically, there are those people, but there's so much more on social media. There's so much more in terms of live events, in terms of even at the boat show. I see them talking about mental health clinics and workshops and things like that. So I do think it's becoming way more commonplace. Obviously, still probably a far cry from other industries, right? We're in this weird niche where it's not like HR in probably the UK and in America, where you can just walk into a room and get certain resources, or someone's checking up on you on a regular basis. There's not that much personnel. There's not that much. There's not that many resources, and there's not as much impetus on the owner because it's not like a legal requirement, right? So going to it, I do think it will continue to improve, and I'm happy to see that. I'm happy to see things like rotation, which isn't exactly linked fully to mental health, but it also, in the sense that if you're getting longer breaks away from the boat or a more regular routine, again, this is all going to contribute to a more positive mental state for the crew. So I do think that there are concessions being made and it's improving. Probably it's not to the rate that I would like. I think there needs to be a huge focus on how do we keep crew in not just sane, but in good mental standing, because it's not as easy as just removing them and hiring another one, because then the boat's constantly just wasting money and not improving or losing knowledge or whatever you want to call it. There's so many yachts that could benefit from actually sitting back and thinking, how do we make this program more palatable mentally and in for our crew? So I hope with time, more and more owners realize that. I think it'll start with the bigger stuff and it'll eventually trickle down.
Yeah.
But it is getting better. And I am very hopeful. And I know that the problem with it is that there's so many people that they hear mental health or they hear some buzzword, for lack of a better term, right? And they turn off. They go, oh, this is all we're hearing about now. But that's how change happens, right? It needs to like be perpetually shoved in someone's face to the point that then it's a normal word that lost a little bit of meaning, but it's common now. And then it's suddenly, oh, we can all vote now? Great. But at the beginning, it's like, oh, what's with this suffrage thing? Like, why do women want to vote anyway? Yeah. And then eventually you just adopt it. So I think it'll be a little bit of that. I think 10 years is probably a wide enough gap that I think we'll see some real movement. Mm-hmm. 1 year is probably small enough that we won't see that much. I think 5 years, I would love in 5 years to see a lot more boats with rotation, for them to be more companies that you can maybe tell through like how we're doing right now on Zoom or something, talk with someone, or maybe on some of these big yachting hubs that we constantly are going in and out of. Maybe there's like pop-up places that with crew are going and talking to people or unloading or whatever, or even maybe something that the boat is offering, right? Like, hey, as part of our insurance package, this is just like we have in the case of a medical emergency, a doctor on call. Hey, here's someone. If you feel like you need to talk to someone, here's who the company has provided, right? Let's start with things like that.
Valuable insight you offered there, Hugo. And just thinking on the other side, one of the key words you mentioned was benefit, and people do need to see the benefit, and not everyone sees the benefit. And also you've got the pressure at times, like, come on, just going back to old school, you get on with it. That was it. Looking after you, listening to you. It's not the done thing. And you can say it's probably gone too much the other way, but like you said, we need to in order to make it a norm, a healthy norm. But how do you get people to see the benefit, particularly the owners? Because as you said, it starts a culture. Every culture starts from the top. And if the owners don't grasp it, then it's very difficult for it to have an impact in the other areas.
Right. To what you said, the most important thing is getting the owner's buy-in, which can be the hardest thing. The owner, for the most part, I've had all kinds of owners. I've had hands-on owners, hands-off owners, ones who don't care, ones who care too much. And at the end of the day, even the boats that have no budget, quote unquote, still money is what makes these people tick, right? That's what they see. That's their language of love, whatever you want to call it. So showing them, I think, it takes a lot of prep work probably, but showing them the numbers, this is the retention rate. This is what we do. This is how much we lose to training, right? Put it in a dollars and cents kind of way. Like if we kept one person this whole year, rather than going through six, and having to fly them, having to get them on the insurance, having to then fly them home. If you break it down and show this is, we lost 20,000 just in this position. If we instituted these small changes, like having a benefit program where we can have people to talk to, this is a busy boat. If we can get people more time off through rotation, like if you line up these things and you showed, hey, it would actually cost the boat overall, maybe it costs the boat an extra 25 grand a year. Maybe it costs more. Maybe it costs 40 grand, but maybe we end up saving 70.
Yeah.
Well, I think at that point, if you have good numbers, and especially the wider that gap is, it would be a lot easier, at least. I'm not saying it's a slam dunk still, but it'll be easier to explain to the owner. But it has to be in dollars and cents, I think. It can't be it really can't be on an emotional claim. Hey, yeah, everyone's going to feel better and love you more, because it's tough. These guys didn't get to where they are by going off of emotional claims. And sorry, I say guys.
Yeah.
And it's very rare that you have owners that are so just enthralled with the crew and the lifestyle that they feel close enough to even have the emotional connection, right? Like maybe if they lived aboard, yeah, and you've got this small boat and this crew's been with them forever, yeah, you've got this very niche window where maybe they would just care. But for the most part, I think dollars and cents, yeah.
So speak their language, money.
Yeah.
No, it is true. And recruitment, we really underestimate how much money recruitment costs. So Hugo, coming towards the end now, you said you just got back. What are your immediate plans now? Are you having a wee vacation or are you back into work?
Yeah, I wish I could have more of a vacation. Yeah. I got here and I spent probably 4 or 5 days just checked into a hotel with my missus. We had a really nice time. And living on an island, I feel like I'm always on vacation in a way, right? Like the beach is, I can literally walk to the beach in probably 1 minute. So just probably making sure to keep my nose near the laptop, to be fair. I'm slowly, like I mentioned, getting into the pace that I like to work at and catching up with everything. I have a really good balance here where I can slack off as much as I want and work as much as I want. So just trying to keep in the middle, right? Enjoy the summer, enjoy the tropical paradise where I live in, but yeah, get back into the thick of it, get back into getting more students through the program and then continuing to grow the business. We're looking to grow from, we're mostly on Instagram now. We're expanding onto the other socials and got some other projects in the works, do a little bit more recruitment as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, just staying busy.
And I'm thinking about what you said at the beginning in regards to your previous work and realizing, recognizing this isn't me. That was the first step, right? Recognizing what's not you before, even before finding what is you, we need to know this is not me. So what would you say to people out there now who will listen to this or come across this later who are in that position? Because there's many of us who are thinking, I'm doing something which is not, I don't really identify with.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure, especially in US culture, to try to figure out what it is that you're passionate about. What is that one thing that speaks to you, right? What is that one person that you want to marry and all this stuff, especially at a really early age?
Yeah.
And I had a lot of problems with trying to accept those things. And then I was 23, realizing I'd been in a multi-year relationship with someone that I didn't see long-term. There was that whole pressure of being with someone. I realized I went down a career because I was good at a few skills. Like for me, it was math and science. It didn't mean I had to be an engineer, right? It didn't mean I had to go work in oil and gas, but you have to make these decisions at the beginning. And then it's very quick that you realize you build something around you that is more of a cage than a home. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, I think the most important thing, sometimes more important than knowing what you want to do, who you want to be with, it's just knowing what you don't want to do, right? Mm-hmm. I hate this. Like you said, and whenever you feel that, just trying to run or escape from that in a way that you can, right? For me, I was able to go traveling. I had enough money saved up. But go and try a lot of things, right? I didn't go straight into yachting. I did a little bit of blogging online. I was looking at different ways of making money online. I was considering other options, maybe going back to school. Like I was looking at a lot of different things. I went traveling also to just try to meet as many people as I could. Not everyone needs to travel. You can do that in your hometown if you want to, but just be exposed to different things. Change the routine, really. Just flip the switch and see what falls into play. It's hard because, yeah, yachting fell into my lap and that's not really a strategy for finding a career. But I think the first steps, leaving what I didn't like, going on this new adventure, being open to new ideas, meeting new people, those are activities that you can replicate. And that is the formula for success, right? Trying to get outside that comfort zone and then see what comes around. And easily, if yachting wasn't the thing and I spent a couple years, I was originally looking at doing it as a gap year.
Yeah.
Looking and going, okay, this still isn't for me, but I'm in a better spot. Let's try it again, or let's see how I can pivot from this into something else. Even where I'm standing today now, working at Super Yacht Sunday School and helping people get into yachting, right? This is also a pivot off of another thing I was doing. But realizing, okay, I have had my fill being crew. I think now I can take, you know, a lot of the qualities that I had before. I've taught English, I taught in university, I did a lot of things. Like taking those two things and putting them together, now at a later age, I'm able to see a little bit easier, what will I like? But at the beginning, it's just about trying different things. So if you're 19, if you're 20, hell, if you're 35 and you've never tried anything else, if you're feeling those feelings of being trapped, I hate this isn't for me, just get out of that situation in a safe way and try as much other stuff as you can and try to cross off as many other jobs on the list.
Yeah. Well, I know two of my daughters were so love listening to you. And how do I connect with you? Is it Super Yacht Sunday School?
Yeah, perfect. You can find us Super Yacht Sunday School. I've got Instagram there. I'm on all the socials, but you can reach out on Instagram. We're quite big there. And then as well, there's superyachtsundayschool.com. You can feel free to go on there. There's a free training. If you're even thinking yachting might be the thing for you, but you're not sure how does it work, etc. I've got a big button on there that says free training. You can sign up, watch that. But as well, just reach out. Just shoot me a message and I answer every email.
Oh, Hugo, thank you so much. You fill me with energy. It's inspirational listening to you, what you've done, the changes, etc., what you recognize in that self-awareness. This is what I don't want to do. And stepping out. And there needs to be a part where to take risk. Yes, you've had the security, like you're able to have the finances to lead you to explore. But it's that mental change, that mental decision to say, right, this is not the path for me, so let me seek the path. And you say yachting fell into your lap, but I believe that we seek what we find, whether it's conscious or subconscious. We do, once we get desire, it generally does meet with us, however, in different shapes. And I'm no doubt we'll be speaking again. As I said, I would definitely give your details to two of my daughters, and they're in that position at the moment, just finished college, thinking, do I go to university, do I want to travel? Yeah, so thank you so much. And regards to men and mental health, I'm thanking that you do speak. And you do have a couple of people in your industry you can talk to, which is great, even if it's just one person. And having that similar heart in terms of encouraging us men in particular to reach out to speak. And even if it is when it gets too much, some of us men don't even speak then. And the consequences can be catastrophic in terms of heart attacks, panic attacks, or even just leading towards dark, very dark thoughts and thinking, we're on our own, and we know we're not on our own. And that saying is true. A problem shared is a problem halved. And we really need to, as men, encourage each other to talk, to reach out. And I'm also glad that this opportunity was used for you to remind you about Father's Day this Sunday. So I hope you do remember to tell your dad.
I'm thankful for that too.
And huge kudos to your parents for the stability in your upbringing and the principles they instilled in you. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.